Waterford's David McGlynn became the first Asian man to win the National Marathon title since John Tracy in 1993. I caught up with the 26-year-old following an amazing performance at this year's Dublin Marathon.
Sports Beat Extra.
Beat 102-103.
David, thanks a million for joining me. I mean, I have to start. Where do we even start with the story of you? Because I was looking up throughout your entire, I suppose, backlog of races you've won. You've kind of been slowly going up in terms of race distance throughout your entire career. But where would you kind of say is the beginning of your sort of athletics journey?
Yeah, so I suppose it started, I was 10 or 11 years old going down to Waterford AC, training twice a week. I wasn't really taking running too serious at that time. I was more kind of interested in other sports, but I sort of gradually got better as the years went on. And then I made an Irish team for cross country when I was 16 or 17, I think. So yeah, that was kind of the start of starting to take it more seriously and realising that maybe there could be kind of a future in it for me. And then, yeah, when I was kind of 17, 18, I put a lot of focus into it to try to take it to another level. And yeah, it's gone from strength to strength over, well, not without its hiccups along the way, but yeah, it's taken me, I've been taking it serious to try to be at a high level at it for probably around 8 years or so now. And yeah, it culminated there a few weeks ago. It's probably the best achievement of my career so far. So yeah, hopefully I can build on it now.
I mean, everyone probably has been talking to you about that massive achievement. We'll certainly talk about it as well here. But it's not your first national title, because obviously in 2023, the 10,000 metres national title as well was also something you won. So you're used to sort of the spotlight now at this stage, are you?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a different one. That 10,000 metre title was actually on the track during the summer, but it was in the middle of summer, so a lot of people don't actually run the 10,000 metres that late into the summer in Europe because the weather doesn't really permit it outside of Ireland. So that one maybe wasn't as like hotly contested, certainly, as the marathon a few weeks ago. So the marathon was definitely kind of the biggest achievement of my career so far. And like, I wouldn't say I had a lot of early success in running. Like I was always fairly decent, but like underage, I finished fourth at All Ireland Cross Country. That was my best finish as a junior. And yeah, I just kind of kept chipping away at it, kept showing up. Won a few kind of road races around Ireland in the last kind of couple of years. And then, yeah, training had gone really well for Dublin. So I thought kind of a special day could be on the cards. And yeah, thankfully it was.
When did you link up initially with Ray Tracy then for obviously coaching?
Yeah, so I went to, I did my undergrad in UCC for 4 years after secondary school. And then I was lucky enough, Ray offered me a scholarship to go to Providence, Providence College in America. So I did a master's over there for 2 years. So he coached me for 2 years while I was over there. And yeah, he's continued to coach me since then. And yeah, been a massive kind of mentor for me as such, moving from, like you said, the 5K, 10K up to half marathon and marathon. I couldn't have asked for a better mentor. And in fact, he's a Waterford man as well, as an added bonus.
Obviously, I was going to ask on Providence, but kind of a lot of Irish athletes, especially if they see that future going down the line of wanting to obviously compete in Worlds or Olympics or whatnot, they end up going over to America for even just a couple of years to get a taster of what that sort of elite level of athletic performance is like. What was that like for you going out? Because it's a huge adjustment to go from Waterford all the way over to America and then to adjust to such a difference in training, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a big adjustment. And it like you said there, to kind of see that like elite level, it was probably the first time I'd really been exposed to going to races and kind of training with athletes. Well, I've trained with obviously some extremely good athletes in Ireland as well, but training with like supremely talented athletes kind of from, like I trained in Providence with a guy called DJ Principe. He ran sub 4 for the mile when he was like 16 or and that kind of stuff. And like, obviously we have the likes of Dara McLenny and Nick Riggs in Ireland, but it kind of seems like every other person in America has just such talent. And yeah, going to races where like you're racing against like the best athletes in America, and that just like, because America is so big, that talent pool is massive. And yeah, it's a cutthroat system in a way that like everybody wants to make the NCAA national meet at the end of the season. And if you don't make it, no one cares. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have that in Ireland where you might be kind of a big fish in a small pond, but you go over there and it's an absolutely massive pond. so yeah, it was kind of an eye opener to kind of the level that you have to get to in the sport to kind of really consider yourself a top athlete. Like, it's all well and good competing on the national level here. And I suppose when I went to Providence, we probably didn't have the level in Ireland that we have now. Like, we definitely have a higher standard over the last couple of years. Irish athletics has gone really from strength to strength, and we have a massive, a really strong group of athletes training in Ireland at the moment. But that was kind of my first exposure to kind of like Olympic level athletes, and seeing what it takes to get to that level. So yeah, it kind of just opened my eyes to that and made me want to push on that bit more.
Do you think in your situation when you went over to Providence, when you're surrounded by so many brilliant athletes, that it almost makes you better just by pure proximity?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of that, like, our rising tide lifts all boats, like that. You kind of go there and, like, you might go over there thinking, oh yeah, I've done some good things at home, I've ran these times. But then you go over there and you're like, well, I'm 30 seconds behind this guy next to me, and this guy didn't even make the national meet last year. It's kind of like, well, I have to up my game to get to that level. And I think, though, like, we have that in Ireland at the moment. Like, it's not just all about going abroad for it. Like, even you see in the marathon at the minute that, like, Fergal Curtin ran 2:07 a couple of weeks before I ran Dublin. And it just, like, it's funny that it just opens your mind up straight away to be like, well, if an Irish person can run that, then, or someone that you know on a personal level or have trained with before, is that it's possible. And like I said, we have that in Ireland at the minute, where we've got loads of lads running down close to 13 minutes for 5K, close to under 28 minutes for 10K, down close to 60 minutes in the half marathon. And then obviously Fergal's ran 2:07. A few of us have ran 2:11, 2:10 this year. And it's like, that's kind of, it raises your level and makes you realise what's possible.
I mean, obviously for you, a huge achievement, not only getting the national title this time in the marathon, but you made your debut at the Dublin Marathon last year, just over 2:15. And now this year, 2:11, like, a massive shave off that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was funny. I actually said before going into Dublin that I thought I could run 2:11. I was kind of conservatively saying 2:12, 2:11. And a lot of people did say that to me, being like, geez, that's 4.5 minutes faster than last year. But I think it, like, especially with the marathon, when you only get to race them twice a year, you kind of don't really see, like, a lot of people wouldn't have seen the level that I was at in training. And like the training I've done over the last year, I think I've averaged probably around 150 kilometers a week for the last year. I had a big breakthrough in the half marathon earlier this year as well. And yeah, you just kind of, you're constantly taking your level behind closed doors. You're constantly taking your level up a notch. And then, yeah, like, on the surface, it looks like 2:15 to 2:11. Just how did you do that? But like, a massive amount of work went into it in the last year. Like, with all the mileage and training, I went on 2 altitude training camps, big breakthrough in the half. So yeah, I was happy to kind of, I thought that my level had gone up a good bit since last year, but it's a relief when you actually put it on paper on the day.
I was going to ask about those altitude camps. Are they the ones out in France, was it?
I was in Font-Romeu in France for a month, and I was in Dulstrom in South Africa for a month as well.
And is that your first time going out to do those high altitude camps?
Yeah, so I was at altitude for the first time in January, and then went again in September before Dublin. So I had two, like, kind of breakthrough performances off the back of them. So yeah, it tells me that I respond well to that kind of training, and yeah, hopefully have more planned for next year.
That's presumably, like, another big shift for you, to kind of, like, an edge towards, obviously you're still working part-time and kind of doing this alongside it, but kind of that more and more moving towards getting full-time as an athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a funny one, that, like, you get to a certain level that maybe you might think you should be a full-time athlete, or maybe you think, like, some people might think they deserve to be a full-time athlete. Like, I don't really see it that way, because, like, it doesn't really matter if I'm full-time or if I'm part-time, if I can keep getting faster and if I keep have the facilities available to me to get faster, and the environment that I'm in allows me to get faster. And kind of that's all I can really control and really focus on. Is that, like, if I ran what I ran and then I'm going back to work being like, oh, this is terrible, I should be a full-time athlete, then you're kind of just, that's out of your control. Like, if if someone wants to sponsor me and make me a full-time athlete, so be it. But like, I'm not, it's, I don't really have any control over it. So, and like, I have a fantastic setup at work that I work for Ernst & Young. I started off here in Waterford. I'm up in Dublin now. But the people in there look after me really well, and the team I work with look after me really well, that they know that I'm trying to achieve this at a high level. And like, when I go away in training camp, I can work remotely while I'm over there. And yeah, they facilitate the kind of dream, so to speak, a lot. And that's all that really matters. It's like, that's what's in my control. And if I have the environment to get faster, then I can't really complain.
Mm-hmm. There equally must be a point to you as well that looks at, obviously, you know, there is a lot of Irish athletes that are really inspirational and get to that really high level. But there's equally on top of that, probably, I suppose, 90 for every one that gets through, 100 for every one that doesn't make it. Like, to have that sort of career alongside it is equally as important for you, is it?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. It's like, especially with a sport like running, like, it's not the most glamorous sport in the world. It's not like I'm going to go make millions off running, no matter who sponsors me. So yeah, I definitely need, like, the run is not going to last forever. And like, hopefully I will have a long career, another few more years chipping away at it. But yeah, definitely that's, I need to have something to do at when I finish. And yeah, I love working for Ernst & Young. And there's a great culture in there. So yeah, it's definitely something I can see myself doing when the running is done. So yeah, it's good to have that focus on the side as well, to make sure I don't lose my mind amongst the training.
Let's talk about the thing that you're probably sick of talking about at this stage, or maybe you're not at this stage, but the Dublin Marathon. I mean, we can't not talk about it. You're the first Waterford man since 1993 to win the national title. Have you spoken to John Tracy at all?
I actually haven't spoken to John about it, no. I talked to Ray after the race, all right, and we were laughing, saying that thank God a Waterford man's on the trophy again. But yeah, no, I'll have to try link up with John and talk through his race back in the day. But yeah, it's kind of that makes it, I actually didn't really realise that until a couple of days after, that I was the first Waterford man since John Tracy. And that kind of was probably the first, like, it was a bit of a whirlwind for a few days after, but that was probably the first time where I was like, kind of took a deep breath and was like, geez, I achieved something really big. Because like, a name like John Tracy to follow in his footsteps, that's like, that's one of your idols, like. So yeah, that was pretty surreal to see that.
When you look at, I suppose, halfway through the race, you're in 12th, you're kind of chasing up on the pack. Is it difficult, I suppose, to switch off the part of your brain that sees maybe someone just ahead of you, and to like maybe just think, oh, I'm going to power through and get through them now, because you're so far into this race and you know that there's still a lot left to do? How do you manage sort of that feeling of obviously wanting to pass someone out, but at the same time knowing that, you know, you will eventually, you just don't need to do it right now?
Yeah, it's funny. You draw on your experience, and obviously, like, I've only attempted to do 3 marathons, like I said to you before. I only finished 2, but so I don't really have loads of experience, but you draw on the experiences you do have. And I had a bad experience in the marathon earlier this year. I dropped out of a marathon before 30K in Hamburg because I had went too hard in the first half. And kind of, I was very fixated on, I wanted to run 2:11 in Hamburg. And I was very fixated on the pace I had to run, the time I had in mind. And I kind of just didn't really consider how I was feeling in the race or how long the race was. And yeah, I blew up 4:30K. So I knew I wasn't going to make the same mistake again. And yeah, the group did go out really fast, and I was with the group for the first kind of mile or two. But I knew if I was to stay with that group that, like, I was going to blow up again. And that, I didn't want to do that. So I let the group go and just ran my own pace. And like, I was still like, I think it made it easy for me not to really go after them, because I was still absolutely flying. Like, I was having a great day. And like, I was well on pace. Like, I was 64:58 at halfway. And like, I was 30 seconds behind the top 3 Irish lads. So yeah, I that kind of made it easy not to go after them. And I just kept on telling myself that I was doing the right thing and that they would come back to me. And yeah, thankfully I was able to reel them in later in the race.
When you look at, I suppose, 2:11 now, does that feel like your maximum or does it feel like a minimum?
Definitely doesn't feel like a maximum. It's I think it's just the nature of sport that, like, I don't know if I'll ever see myself having a maximum kind of way. It's not like, I ran 2:11, but like, I might look back on the kind of training block I had, and there was maybe a couple of imperfections that I had a knee problem during the summer that I had to miss a couple of weeks from. So if I didn't miss those couple of weeks, maybe I might have ran a bit quicker. My hamstrings cramped up on me the last 4 miles, and I actually think I lost about 30 or 40 seconds because of that. So if my hamstrings don't cramp the next time, that these are kind of all the things you're thinking of. And then the weather and the course isn't, it wasn't great in Dublin that day. There's a few hills. So you're thinking, if I can get to a flat course, it's like you have all these kind of this analysis that you do of the race that by the time you're done with it, you think you're going to run 205. Not literally, but yeah, I don't think I'll ever go to a race, run it, come away from it being like, yeah, that's the absolute most I can do. I think I definitely want to build on it. And even like, it was nearly 3 weeks ago now, and to be honest, I've almost forgotten it's even happened. I'm already thinking about the next one and trying to get back into training for the next one. So yeah, I think definitely have kind of bigger goals in mind, and yeah, hopefully strive towards them in 2026.
When you look back at Hamburg and you look at obviously the Dublin Marathon, do you think that there's a mentality switch in the sense that obviously for Hamburg you were on about, you really need, you were chasing to get that 2:11, whereas in Dublin you were kind of a bit more relaxed about it and able to kind of just see it coming? Is there an element to your career that feels like you need to slow down and realize you will get to this point at some stage? It's just about not trying to chase it too hard, because that'll actually hamper you in the long term.
100%, yeah. And that's exactly, those are exactly the learnings I took from Hamburg, is that you're trying to, you, once you kind of, like, I had a massive breakthrough in the half marathon in February, and then the marathon was in April, and you kind of, once you kind of get a taste for it, you might start to like force it and be like, well, I can do this, I can run this. Like, I, before in January I would have bitten your hand off for 2:12 in Hamburg, but then you kind of, training goes well, you run a good half marathon, you're like, well, I'm going to run 2:10 at the minimum. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's very easy to get sucked into that, and yeah, once you learn from it, I think, yeah, you can. And I took that attitude into the training as well, to just be like, I don't need to force it in the training, to just kind of stack the weeks and trust that it will all come together on the day. And thankfully it did. So yeah, I'll definitely bring that forward now as well, being like, if I can just, like I said, go away on the altitude camps, do the big mileage weeks and get to a start line healthy with no setbacks in training, then I kind of know what I'm capable of. And I, like, you get those, that confidence off kind of big breakthrough race like that. So yeah, I'll take that into my next training block and race, and yeah, naturally just kind of let the progressions come, hopefully.
Speaking about those final 4 miles, obviously you said you were cramping up a little bit. Is there, I suppose, an element to marathons where you actually see the finish line, that it actually gets a lot more difficult to get to it then, because you can actually visualize the end, whereas before you're kind of thinking about it in terms of numbers?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, yeah, it's funny because once I was at that, once my hamstring started cramping up, I was in the lead at that stage. So I had already caught the lads, whereas for the first 22 miles or 21 miles, I was just thinking about catching the lads. So I wasn't thinking about how I was feeling or anything. And then you get to the lead and you kind of start looking around being like, geez, how do I feel? Am I going to be able to hold this? So yeah, there definitely is an element of that. I think that's kind of the beauty of Dublin as well. You don't get that everywhere because it's the national championship race. Like, I'm not going to go to a marathon in Europe in the spring and it be a national championship race. That's not going to happen. So you kind of are more focused on time and the numbers of it then. But yeah, that kind of brings another element to Dublin, which makes it probably a bit special, a bit more special on the day.
Yeah. Actually, since you bring that up, it is an interesting, because I think it translates well over regardless of what sport you do in terms of whether it's a race or not. Chasing is almost easier than being ahead, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's like that age old saying in soccer or something, that 2-goal lead is terrible lead, because once the other team gets the momentum, it's exactly like that. That I had all it, and it, that kind of ties into how perfect the day Dublin was for me, that I had all the momentum for 75% of the race, basically. Once I started kind of slowly catching them, and yeah, I kind of, once I caught them in the race, I kind of made sure that I just went straight by them so that they didn't get any sort of, like, that build any momentum. And yeah, it was a lonely enough last 4 miles out there when you're just like, I have to keep this together. But yeah, thankfully I was able to do it.
Where did your family position themselves? Was it near the end or near the beginning?
Both my parents were at the start, and then they were in the home straight. But then I had loads of friends out on the course, kind of scattered all around the place. My girlfriend Sarah was at a couple of spots as well. So yeah, I had plenty of support all over the course. And yeah, having the parents in the home straight, that made it, that was the perfect spot for them to be in, I think.
But that's kind of a huge thing at the end. Like, we talk about the difficulty in those last 4 miles, but seeing them there, and not only that, being at home in Dublin, I suppose, well, at home in terms of in Ireland and Dublin for that national race, like, that probably gave you that little bit more of a boost to get to the end, didn't it?
100%, yeah. And like, that really does make Dublin that bit special, that like, even kind of people you don't know out in the course, when they see a Waterford singlet coming past, they're shouting up the day, shouting, come on, Waterford. And like, that makes it very enjoyable, that like, you're out there for 2 hours and 11 minutes. It's a long time to just be out there running. So those kind of little mental distractions of someone shouting up the day at you, that make Dublin a very like special marathon to do. And then like that, you said, having your loved ones on the course when it does get tough, like in that kind of last 10K, that you can think, like, I know I was thinking with at around mile 18 that I knew my girlfriend was on close to mile 21. One of my best friends was on mile 22. I knew the lads that I live with were in around mile 23. So like, I have those kind of scattered points of being like, when I get there, I've got that boost. And yet you don't get that when you go kind of mainland Europe.
You've described your journey so far as years of mild sacrifice and delusion masked as belief. Obviously, that sounds inspiring to a lot of people, but also there's an element of, you know, I suppose, sadness to that, is there?
I don't think so, no. I think there's plenty of beauty in kind of having that delusion about yourself that, like, 3 months ago, I I've been telling myself basically all year that I was going to win the national title at Dublin. Hmm. 6 months ago, that was total delusion. Like, I had done nothing to suggest that I was going to do that. Well, not nothing, but like, I had just finished, like, probably a week after I DNF'd Hamburg Marathon, my focus instantly turned to, I'm going to win the national title at Dublin. And like, at that stage, that is delusion. Like, you can't. And to be honest, it's delusion almost up to the very day when you stand on the start line, because even like obviously not finishing a marathon earlier this year, like, it takes its toll on your confidence. Same with any sport. Like, if you lose a big game, go through a bad spell of form, like, your confidence is knocked 100%. But all you can really do is just put the work in training. And like, up to a week before, people asked me, what do you think you can do in Dublin? And like, internally, I was saying to myself, I'm going to win. But you kind of say to people, like, I don't have the confidence to just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to win. And you're kind of saying to people, I think I can run 2:12, 2:11. And like, to be honest, when I was saying it out loud to people, I was like, do I even believe that? Like, is that fully belief, or is it just delusion? So that's kind of where I'm coming from, saying delusion masks belief. But I think I've always kind of had that throughout my career in sport, that like, I think back to making a European cross country team in 2019, Des Colbert in Waterford was coaching me, and like, I had just come off a summer where I ran, I think, 15:15 for 5K or something, which was probably 75 seconds slower than what the lads who thought, who would be favoured to make the team, were running for 5K at that time. But I said to Des at the start of the training block, was like, I think I can make the Eurocross team. It's like, why did I think that? You know, it's just, it's always kind of, I think it's kind of a trait of sports people in general, that you do have that bit of delusion. And yeah, if you have the right, like I said, environment and facilities and people around you to kind of harness the delusion in a positive manner, then yes, I think special results can come from it.
You said delusion. Would you be a believer in manifestation, or?
I think not necessarily, like, I don't literally manifest or anything like that, but I think, or consciously manifest, should I say, but like, on every single run I do, I'm thinking about that. Like, I'll go run this evening and I'll be thinking about the marathon I'm going to do in the spring. I'll be imagining those roads, and then, yeah, so I think there probably is a bit of manifestation in it. And like, it's funny, like, I moved to Dublin earlier this year, but I think I'll always remember kind of the last couple of years when I moved home from America training around these roads in Waterford. And I always kind of get a special feeling off, like, running out the back roads to Tramore or the back roads to Dunmore, that like, when you're lonely on those roads, there's no cars looking at you and stuff, that you really do get into kind of that kind of visualization zone of picturing the races and stuff. And yeah, you kind of, that's where the delusion, you're kind of telling yourself the things that you can achieve. And like, I've achieved some things now that I once was delusional about. So yeah, I think I'll always have kind of a special memory of the roads around here and training around here when you are kind of doing that visualization and manifestation. So yeah, maybe not consciously, but yeah, I'm sure it's in there somewhere.
Do you find you train better if you come back down here? Does it feel like, because you have that link to it now in your own mind of, obviously, you know, deluding yourself, as you say, even though it's come true. But like, you know, do you have that feeling when you come back down here that you feel you perform better?
It's funny. I definitely have a great environment in Dublin, and I think that the move to Dublin was probably necessary to kind of take that next step, just with like the athletes that I'm surrounding myself with in Dublin. Like they're some of the best in Ireland, and they're competing on the European and world stage. And I'm training in the National Sports Institute every Wednesday, and kind of being surrounded by athletes up there that wouldn't necessarily be like distance runners. Even like the other day, Sarah Lavin was in the gym, and like she's one of the best Irish athletes over the last decade. And just kind of to be surrounded by athletes and kind of see the intricacies of their training and how they approach it does make a big difference. I think it was kind of necessary, and I have a great environment up there. But yeah, there'll definitely be a special place in my heart for Waterford always, and remembering. Because like I wouldn't have been able to just move to Dublin and just show up at the National Sports Institute if I hadn't put in all the miles around here. So it definitely got me to the level where I was able to kind of kick on from it. And yeah, I have all my kind of my session spots around here, like the Waterford Industrial Estate. I think I'll always remember those as my favourite places to train.
You were down recently to help launch the Waterford Half Marathon. Will you be making an appearance?
I won't this year, I'm afraid. I'm still getting the body back underneath me after the marathon, so it might just come a little bit too quick. But I did it once in 2023. Hopefully I'll be able to make a return to that start line.
Can we ask how you did back then?
I won it back then. I ran 65:26 for the half marathon that day in 2023. So yeah, again, for context, it's less than 2 years later, and I was able to split 64:58 for the half in Dublin, feeling comfortable. So like, yeah, it's just been a long kind of process of, I've had a lot of consistency in training since then. And that's kind of when you just keep showing up to training and just keep chipping away at it, that, yeah, big things can happen, I suppose.
Obviously, all the next few races, you'll be kind of etching towards that Europe 2026 championship. Is the Olympics still in the back of your mind a little bit? Is it like, are you, I suppose, in a sense, deluding yourself into getting there now?
Yeah, I'd say it's very much in the forefront of my mind, not the back of my mind. But yeah, I think it's certainly a level that I think is achievable. Qualifying for the European Championships next year will be the first step. I'll do another marathon in the spring towards that. It's definitely something that like I can see myself achieving for 2028, and then if not 2028, definitely 2032. Hopefully both. But like, I don't see why not. Like I've seen the improvement I've made in the last year, purely off consistency. And like now that I'm training with the athletes I'm training with and with the coaches I'm training with, like Ray is one of the best marathon coaches in the world. I've got up in Sport Ireland Institute, I've got Martina McCarthy and Claire Brady are looking after my S&C, and like that they've shown with the results that they've gotten in the last year that they're some of the best in Europe and the world as well, and the athletes that they look after. So, and like we're constantly like tracking our data in the gym, doing testing on like my running aerobic capacity, my running economy and all that kind of stuff. So like I'm definitely at the level where I don't see why I can't train like an Olympian for the next 3 years. So like, again, it kind of goes back to what I said at the start. Like that's the main thing I can control, is can I train like someone who's going to make the Olympics? And I think I can. So then it's up to me to put it together on race day. But yeah, it's definitely something I'll be aiming at. And yeah, hopefully I can have the consistency in training over the next few years to allow me to achieve it.
I suppose just finally on that, I suppose it's kind of difficult to predict or even to look ahead to something that hasn't happened yet. But if you, in a few years, or even like when you're in like your 40s, or maybe you finished up your career as a runner, do you think that you'll look back on this race in particular as being extremely important, or not, if not the most important race to getting you started on this journey?
100%, yeah, definitely. Because it's definitely the biggest achievement of my career so far, and definitely the best performance of my career so far. And yeah, it opens up your mindset. Like I think last year after Dublin, someone would have asked me about the Olympics and I would have said, yeah, hopefully. And like kind of saying, like if I can get down, like last year 2:11 would have been a dream performance for me. Whereas now it just opens up your mindset towards what you have to do to make it possible. Like last year when if someone asked me about the Olympics and I'm saying hopefully, whereas this year I'm saying, yeah, I think I can because I have all these metrics that I think will allow me to do it. So yeah, I think if I have the consistency, it's something to aim at. And like the people I surround myself as well with, they're all aiming towards that too. So like we have that kind of group environment where we're all training towards the Olympics. Like the Olympics automatic standard is 2:06:30, which is like would be the best Irish marathon performance. Well, not performance, John Tracy back at getting silver, but the best Irish marathon time ever by a good bit. And like you can get in off the point system as well. But it's funny, like a few days after Dublin, I met a couple of my friends, Dara McClenney and Jack O'Leary, and we're just sitting around having lunch and they're kind of saying to me, sure, why the hell wouldn't you run 2:06:30? And it's just like, it's just that that kind of mindset towards it of being like, who knows what's possible if we can all keep training together. So yeah, I think I have all the kind of tools in the environment and hopefully I have the physical tools to make it happen.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see you next time when you get 2:06:30.
Yeah.
Dave McGlynn, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.